You're listening to Midori House, first broadcast on the 31st of August 2017 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Midori House, coming to you live from Studio One here in London. I'm Andrew Muller. On today's show...
The UK wants to take back control, wants to adopt its own standards and regulations. Well, but it also wants to have these standards recognised automatically in the EU. This is simply impossible.
The EU appears none the wiser as to what the UK's Brexit negotiating stance is, but does the UK itself have any ideas? My guests Ivor Gaber and Sebastian Borger will be discussing this and the day's other top stories, including Theresa May's chances of lasting as long in office as Angela Merkel, or perhaps, to make the question interesting, a tenth as long, the vanishing of Fox News from the very few British screens tuned into it, and the photography competition trying to find France's worst police station. That's all coming up on Midori House on Monocle 24 right now. So, welcome to Midori House. My guests today are Ivor Gaber, Professor of Political Journalism at the University of Sussex, and Sebastian Borger, the London correspondent for Berliner Zeitung. Welcome both. We will start tonight with a detailed analysis of progress in the latest round of Brexit talks. This won't take as long as there hasn't been any. The EU's Brexit negotiator, Michel Barnier, said the two sides are quite far apart, which translates from diplomatic speak as my interlocutors are kidding themselves and quite possibly insane. And the UK's Brexit Secretary, David Davis, urged the EU to be, quote, more imaginative and flexible, which translates from the British as who won the war anyway. In the old days, we'd have sent in a gunboat. Sebastian, is this going as badly as it appears to be?
Well, now, first of all, of course, you are factually wrong.
We can't, it wouldn't be the first time.
But we can't say there hasn't been any progress because David Davis says there has been.
Well, he wouldn't lie about things.
Whereas
like this.
Michel Barnier says there hasn't been. So let's keep that in mind. But seriously,
wondering about that. Actually,
the problem we have, where, if I may adopt here, even though I'm not French, the European side. The problem we have is we have a country which we didn't want to see go, but which has decided to go. That was 14 months ago. And now its representatives turn up having brought papers which are irrelevant to this state of the negotiations and having not put forward any generous proposals for the problems that are on the table, the problems that are on the table, and turn up and tell the European Union, in so many words, please find a solution for our problem. And that simply doesn't wash, you know?
Ivor, you are, of course, a university professor and therefore, I'm sure, well used to dealing with people who have turned up at various sorts of examinations woefully unprepared. Is there an aspect of the please, sir, the dog ate it about the UK's approach to the negotiations so far?
Well, my personal view, which you're asking me, is there certainly is, although I think it's a little more complicated than that.
I hope it's more complicated than that.
I mean, the Brexit team in this country, i.e. the Conservative government, is actually profoundly split itself between hard Brexit, no Brexit, soft Brexit, etc. So they don't really have a confidence to have a well thought out position. However, just playing devil's advocate or Barnier's advocate, there was a very interesting piece in the London Times today from somebody who was in favour of Brexit saying the intransigence of the EU demonstrates exactly why it was right for Britain to leave. For goodness sake, can't they get their act together? We simply want X, Y, Z. So although, Sebastian, I hear what you say, there is another way of looking at it, and I think maybe we should occasionally decide whether Mr. Barnier can.
I am familiar with that point in that, you know, the UK's argument that the people to whom we have caused this massive inconvenience should now make life as convenient as possible for us. But Sebastian, is the fact not just plainly that there is nothing in it for the EU in terms of making this easy for the UK and every reason to make it as difficult as possible.
No. I mean, if we take a step back, then from a German perspective, there is every reason to be as friendly to each other as at all possible, because our apart from friendship and solidarity and partnership, the concept of a West, which we still, I hope, both and all of us belong to. Apart from that, our economies are intertwined in a way which I think most people who voted for Brexit didn't understand or didn't care about. It'll be of tremendous damage to the economies of France and Holland and Germany and Poland, etc. If Britain falls off a Brexit cliff. But the fact remains, of course, that the damage will be immeasurably higher here. And, you know, the intransigence of Mr. Barnier is factored in by the people, the 27 member states, who take the strategic view that their interests are better served to keep the club together than lying down and doing everything that Britain wants. If and when Britain finally decides what it wants, that's the problem. Well, we don't know what Britain wants.
Well, and on that point, Ivor, is the EU possibly hedging because it wants or suspects or indeed hopes that it may end up talking about all this with an entirely different government, that being a Labour government, which in the last week or so, and though it remains unclear how keen Labour's actual leader is on this, has sort of repositioned itself as the party of a softer Brexit?
Well, I think that's a very significant shift. Whether it proves electorally popular is another matter. I have to say that I think if the EU leadership is hoping for that, I think they are hoping in vain, because I cannot see the Conservatives letting power slip from them at the moment, because left, right, centre in the Conservative Party are terrified that they will lose power, lose it to Corbyn. So I don't think that Mrs. May might fall, but I think the Conservative government will hold together. And I do think that the EU is, on the one hand, I actually totally agree with Sebastian, totally entitled to say, come on what you want. But just as Monsieur Barnier is to some extent hamstrung by the 27 governments that he is serving, and therefore doesn't have total freedom of manoeuvre to say, OK, here's what I'm going to offer. Equally, David Davis is hamstrung by the 315 Tory MPs who have 315 different positions on Brexit.
Can I also add, I mean, I agree with Ivor. I mean, one problem that Barnier has is a mandate which doesn't work. You know, in that sense, the Brits are right. You can't negotiate a financial settlement if you don't know what the future relations are. You can't negotiate the future of the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland if you don't know, again, what the future trade relationship is. But, of course, underneath that is, if the UK now said we want to stay in the single market, which is possible despite the Prime Minister saying differently, it's possible to be in the single market without being in the European Union, or at least for a period of time, then that would make, for example, the Irish border much, much easier. But
okay, well, let us look.
We could solve it between us. You know? We should just go there and do it.
You couldn't be doing any worse, I don't think. But let us look now at a tale of two European leaders. One, German Chancellor Angela Merkel, has already served nearly 12 years and is seeking re-election yet again next month. The other, British Prime Minister Theresa May, has been in office a little over 1 year, has already very nearly lost office once, and is today enduring a chorus of disbelief at her assertion that she intends to lead her party at the next election, which might be sooner than she would prefer. The question, I guess, we're asking here, Ivan, first of all, is Angela Merkel now a completely freakish outlier in terms of European leaders? Are we done with the leader who serves across decades and generations?
almost. Do we include Mr. Putin as a European leader?
Not quite.
He's a European leader, but not a democratic leader.
No, okay. I mean, there's a few. I mean, yeah. If we're extending this to example for Belarus, we get into a slightly weird area there as well. Thinking just in terms of EU leaders.
Yeah. Well, we have been going through the most turbulent political times of my short life. And I think that the fact that Mrs. Merkel has not just survived, but prospered and looked secure. And of course, we all are a little bit doubtful about polls. But if the polls are right, she's going to win comfortably. And she has emerged, let's say, as the leader of Europe in terms of nation states. And clearly, she has benefited, if you like, in terms of leadership from the instability in the UK, the instability in France, the continuing instability in Italy. So whether there is a trend of instability everywhere except Germany, I cannot tell you. But I certainly think that her current position is, and I don't like unassailable, but is very, very strong.
Sebastian, leaving aside Merkel's qualities individually, and I think it's probably reasonable to say that you could do an awful lot worse than have your country governed by Angela Merkel, and I suspect most countries do an awful lot worse. But is it healthy for somebody to stay in power that long? The US, of course, term limits its presidents at 8 years. Many other countries and jurisdictions do something similar. Is staying in power that long, good for either the person or the country?
I don't think so. I mean, regular listeners to Midori House may remember that I, when the time came for her to make the decision, I suggested very humbly that she shouldn't. She shouldn't go for another term.
Clearly too humbly. She didn't listen to Sebastian.
Clearly too humbly. She should listen to Midori House more often. I agree with the thesis that I would have thought around 10 years is enough. By the way, I mean, the UK, which is, talking about stability, the UK, which is at the moment looking pretty unstable, of course, was on course for a period of stability. Well, David Cameron had been re-elected in 2015.
He was looking set for the thick end of 10 years.
Tony Blair was there served for 11 years. Mrs. Thatcher served 12 years.
Howard in Australia served whatever, 12 years or whatever.
Howard served 12 years, and then we've since had so many prime ministers. I think I'm due a shot shortly.
There's an anecdote which I won't detain you with about that, but when an ambulance driver in Australia comes across somebody's been in a car crash and they used to test whether they had concussion. They used to say, who's Prime Minister? But they've given that up. But just to come back to a serious point, the issue of term limits and whether Mrs. Merkel has served too long, is a decision for the German electorate, clearly. But it's an interesting one because we normally look at Africa and we say, oh, those African leaders, they don't give up power. And there are some who've been there an awful long time.
But Paul Biya of Cameroon is the current record holder of non-royal heads of state / government is the longest serving. He has been there for several centuries.
Well, he's got a lot of competition, though, because there's quite a few rulers, some of whom are quite democratically elected. Paul Kagame in Rwanda, Museveni in Uganda, Mr. Mugabe, they all win elections.
Some of those, there's a bit of an asterisk next to some of them,
Can I say the comparison, of course, between America and Germany doesn't quite work because the American president has tremendous power and is voted on personally, whereas the German chancellor is elected by parliament, after all, so indirectly. And also, of course, Merkel has had to share power with different coalition partners over the years. To be honest, I think in the end it is up to the electorate, and the electorate can sniff out someone who is over the mark very easily, as they did with Helmut Kohl in 1998.
Ivor, just for fun, we should assess Theresa May's claims that she hopes to. Sebastian, we're going to try and take this a little bit seriously. And enough of your tittering there in the background.
I beg your pardon.
Theresa May's assertions that she does intend to lead the Conservative Party into the next election. I mean, obviously, she has to say yes to that question if she's asked it. It's an obvious gotcha question from a headline-seeking journalist.
She doesn't have to say yes.
She does.
No, she could do what what politicians always do in that situation and say, we've had an election 3 months ago, I am concentrated on my current task and we shall see what the future brings. Something like that.
And then we get a headline, Mrs. May refuses to say.
Because of the British press, yes.
Andrew, despite Sebastian's denials, you're absolutely right that they're in a no-win situation with that question. However, it's only a headline because it's Mrs. May. Because the idea of her staying on and leading the Tories to victory in 2022 would be risible if it wasn't so worrying for the Conservatives. I mean, the serious point to come out of this is that she should never be allowed to go on walking holidays, because on her recent walking holiday, she decided to do the snap election. On this walking holiday, she came back and actually from Germany. So she obviously looked and saw...
No, Switzerland. Please.
German-speaking country.
Well, there are French-speaking parts.
She was in the German
I don't know
bit.
Where she was, right.
But seriously, the fact that it's a headline in today's paper is indicative of Mrs. May's flaky position rather than any real headline
or
story.
Because it is the case, is it not, Ivor, that the reason that she is Prime Minister now, despite that debacle in the last election, is that there is absolutely nobody sane who wants that job right now.
Not even Boris Johnson.
Well, I said. And they're saying, but I think David Davis is as near as damn it, but he's already lost one leadership election to David Cameron, and I don't think he would cut the mustard. But it's not wants the job. I mean, don't forget, Mrs. May got the job because everybody else stabbed each other in the back, front and side. She was the last one left standing. There's been no challenge this time round because the Tories are absolutely terrified of losing their parliamentary majority as a result of that fracas and having a Jeremy Corbyn far-left Labour government.
Can I also say, as a connoisseur of political messages, she went to Japan to talk about the future trade relationship with Japan, and she makes the cardinal mistake of talking about her own future, which, again, I'm sorry, you may say she couldn't avoid the question, but I think she could have answered it in a much more deft way and thereby avoid all this kerfuffle which has broken out here.
A final quick thought on this one from you, Sebastian. Is there any chance Merkel is not re-elected or does not stay on as Chancellor?
As Ivor quite rightly said, we should be extremely suspicious of opinion polls. And, you know, in the last few days, she's had very hostile reception, particularly in East Germany, because voters or people who think the right-wing alternative for Deutschland is worth looking at have given her a hard time. And the media are constantly writing how boring it all is, so people may take it for granted. I don't know. It doesn't look like it, but there's also the TV...
Sitting in this studio about Mrs. May 2 months ago, so you're right.
The TV duel is up on Sunday. You know, she is a very safe pair of hands, but people make mistakes. Who knows?
Okay, we're going to take a short break now. You are listening to Midori House with me, Andrew Muller, along with Ivor Gaber and Sebastian Borger. Coming up next, Fox News vanishes from British television screens.
Are you looking to strike a better work-life balance? If so, then the shiny new September issue of Monocle magazine is just what the doctor ordered. Join Monocle's business team as they head for the most agreeable third-tier cities. Moving advice for those on the hunt for a new live-work base. Breathe in, breathe out, and discover why third-tier definitely doesn't mean third-class. Step into the office of some select founders and CEOs to see exactly how they go about their work, from illustrator Christoph Niemann to legendary designer Dries Van Noten. And there's more. Hear from the first female Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, illuminating views on Geneva's neon scene, a walk through the transformative architecture of Jakarta, and savour the sight of Sweden's garden restaurants brought to delicious life on the page. That's all in the September issue of Monocle, on newsstands everywhere now, or head to monocle.com to become a subscriber.
Yes,
You're back with Midori House on Monocle 24. Still with me are Ivor Gaber, Professor of Journalism, Professor of Political Journalism, at the University of Sussex, and Sebastian Borger, the London correspondent for Berliner Zeitung. Now, Fox News, much beloved of cranky right-wing fulminators, especially the ones it employs on lavish salaries, has been taken off the air here in the UK. The fact that the gloating stories about this in liberal newspapers marked the first time that many people knew Fox News was even available here in the UK possibly explains why. 21st Century Fox announced that it was removing Fox News from the Sky TV package, saying it was no longer, quote, commercially viable, close quote, i.e. that nobody was watching it. Sebastian, why wasn't anybody watching it in the UK?
Well, because I think, first of all, you have two great news channels, both the BBC News and Sky News, which are tightly regulated by Ofcom. And, of course, Ofcom, I think, has regularly had to dish out criticism of Fox.
Seven times in the last year, including their fantastic report that the entire city of Birmingham is now a no-go zone for non-Muslims, which did prompt a great degree of merriment on social media.
So there you are. We have heard of Fox News. but also, I just think it's that kind... It's interesting. It's that kind of extremist, very subjective way of reporting, which is all the rage, of course, in the US, but which doesn't wash at least with television channels here in Britain.
Well, is that the thing, Ivor? Is it that much remarked upon cultural transatlantic difference that British people get their hysterical partisan ranting from the newspapers and expect the TV news to be reasonably sober and serious, whereas in the United States it's the precise opposite?
That's a very important question, Andrew, but can I just do my politician bit and just pick up first? There are three great news services in this country. The ITN, which is the ITV news service, where I cut my teeth, has a much bigger audience than Sky. So I do feel obliged to point out there are three, and that now relates to your question, because they're all based on what we call public service broadcasting ethos, and that is important. And Sky News, I was involved in establishing Sky News here, and that public service broadcasting ethos, which was alien to the Australians who came over here to initially launch it, and we had to educate them, and they eventually got it. but Fox News is out.
Bloody colonials.
They need some teaching. It's outside. Fox News was never in that. But look, Fox News was never a serious news contender here. There are services like Al Jazeera which do come in here, which are good and have decent audiences. And dare I say, Russia Today, RT, also has significant audiences, and CNN, but not Fox News. And I don't think this decision is all about, though, I don't think it's got anything to do with it. This, for me, this decision is clearly related to British politics, in the sense that Mr. Murdoch, who owns Fox News, is desperate to gain total control of the Sky empire in the UK. He has 39%, which is controlling, but he wants 100%. It's worth pointing out this nonsense about Fox News not making any money. Sky News, much bigger, loses millions a year. Nobody runs a news service to make money.
Does the Times, of course.
Of course. So what this is all about is trying to persuade the British government that Mr. Murdoch is a respectable news person, and that he should be allowed to have total control, because the decision has not yet been made. And Fox News, for as the reasons you've pointed out with their complaints to Ofcom, but also serious issues of sexual harassment in the US, mean that Mr. Murdoch regards it as a bit of a drag on his attempts for respectability in terms of Sky. And that's what it's all about.
I wonder, Sebastian, what you make of this, whether Fox News' influence in the United States is itself overstated, not least by Fox News. 2.3 million people watch it, which is a tiny, tiny fraction of the United States population. It is the biggest cable channel, that is true. But I think a stereotype is at large, especially in Europe, that the entirety of the United States is absolutely glued to Fox News at all times. And it is a minuscule fraction of the population is watching it.
I'm reminded when I first came to Britain and analysed the 1992 general election, where, of course, the Sun, on the day after election, came out with that famous headline. It was the Sun what won it.
The Sun what won it.
You know, where Labour had been in the lead, and in the end, the Conservatives won the elections quite comfortably, not by seats in the House, but by votes. And of course, the political scientists pointed out that that wasn't, you know, the headline wasn't true. You can't win an election with two or three lurid headlines. But what you do over the years is having influence and setting the agenda.
You create a climate.
A climate, you set an agenda. And I think that is true for Fox News in the US, as it is true for the rabid right-wing tabloids here in Britain, the Sun, the Daily Mail, also the increasingly tabloidy, the Daily Telegraph, who have been anti-European and set the climate for Brexit to happen. I think that's the comparison that I would use.
And I do think that although this debate in my field of political communications about cause and effect between are people attracted to a media because that's their views or vice versa, I do think that historically we'll be able to look back and see that the influence of Fox News, and it's not just, it's a bit like Trump's tweets, it's not just the 2.3 million, but it's the amplification of those views, Hanratty and all those stuff, I think goes a long way to explaining Trump and the people who voted for him, because Fox News has articulated the discontents and the anger. And I think if it gets articulated, it then gathers momentum.
Okay, well, finally tonight, do spare a thought for France's police, who are not only doing a self-evidently stressful job, but doing it in suboptimal conditions. This is at least the impression given by entries to a photographic competition conducted by the Union of National and Independent Police, which is encouraging disgruntled gendarmes to submit images of dilapidated stations and derelict equipment. Now, it goes without saying, I think, that the police in whichever country should be properly equipped and should be properly accommodated. It did prompt us to ask our guests, and I'll start with you, Sebastian, because all good journalists should have a story about this. Where's the worst place you've ever worked?
Name names.
No problem. Now, look, I got my first job with Munich's best tabloid newspaper, Abendzeitung. I was put on a desk in a tiny room with two chain smokers. I mean, that was bad enough, although I was a chain smoker myself back then, so it didn't matter. There were two drawers in the desk that I was sat at, which were locked. And I asked those two colleagues, what happened here? And they said, well, your predecessor locked it, and then she left rather hurriedly, and we never saw anything from her again. So anyway, I got the caretaker to break it open for me, and out came not only clearly used underwear, but shall we say half, maybe three quarters rotted old salami sandwich with the, you know, some creatures who were interested in that pouring out at me. So that was impressive.
A vivid picture Sebastian has painted there. Can you compete?
I can't compete with the rotting salami and the knickers, but I can compete. I was working for an international television news agency, which will remain nameless, but we were on an industrial estate in West London, and conditions were not great, particularly on the night shift where I found myself, where there was, it felt airless, there was no catering facilities at all, people started eating sandwiches, and then an edict came round. You know, it was 3 a.m, they're hungry, nobody to eat food on the premises, and the alternative was to stand in the industrial estate. So I was the nighttime representative for the National Union of Journalists at the time, a lofty perch. So I was deputed to go and see the head of news in daytime hours to complain about lack of catering. And I told him this heartbreaking story. And I said, and if you don't provide us with some decent catering in the middle of the night, you won't have a happy newsroom. And he looked at me and he said, that's the last thing I want.
Well, see, the only competition I can offer is my recollections of the offices of Melody Maker, the now demised, you know, Rock and Roll Weekly, which was a wonderful place to work at the time, absolutely enormous fun. But obviously, when I think of it now, my recollections of a sort of a cross between a halfway house and a zoo of some description. It should really never have been allowed. On fire safety grounds, if nothing else.
If we have, do we have time for one more?
Very, very quick.
Well, before I was a journalist, I had a summer job working as a delivery driver for a wholesale pharmaceutical company. And my first day, I said, where do we go for lunch? And the bloke said, I'll show you. And we walked to the back of the warehouse, sat on some old packing cases and said, did you bring your sandwiches?
I was my nighttime representative.
Sebastian Borger and Ivor Gaber, thank you both very much. That is all for today's edition of Midori House. It was produced by Henry Rhys Sheridan, researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco and Jonathan Whitfield. Our studio manager was Kieran Banerjee. Music next at 1900, Andrew Tuck with The Urbanist. I'm back with more on the day's big stories on The Daily at 2200. Midori House returns tomorrow at 1800 London time. For now, I'm Andrew Muller. Thanks for listening.